Hello, this is the Voices of CRM podcast for August 29th. I'm Barney Beal, News Director with CertCRM.com. Today we're talking with Martha Rogers, founding principal in the Peppers & Rogers Group, a longtime veteran of the CRM industry, and a driving force behind the concept of one-to-one marketing. Thanks for joining us today, Martha.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Maybe you could start us off telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the CRM business.
Oh my gosh, I met Don Peppers in 1990, and 3 years later we produced the first of our seven books, and then things took off from there.
Yeah. And was there something that drew you to the CRM market?
Well, there wasn't a term CRM back in 1993 when our first book came out. In fact, there wasn't a World Wide Web yet.
Yeah.
But what there was a pretty wide group of technologies that were basically centered around interactivity and database management and mass customization. And the question that we were asking at the time was, what impact do these technologies have on basic business strategy? And we realized that this meant no more mass marketing as we had known and loved it since all of our births, but in fact a different way of thinking about customers instead of thinking of them all as being the same and treating them all as if they were basically alike. We would be learning about them and remembering about them individually, and if I can get you to talk to me and I know something about you that my competitor doesn't know, then I can do something for you he can't do.
Well, sure. I mean, that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you about. I mean, you've talked a bit about assigning value to customers. Can you maybe explain your concept of return on customer and customer lifetime value?
Well, that's the newest book, is Return on Customer, and it's really represented about 3 years of research. What we've really figured out is that when companies get ready to create value for themselves, they really only have one resource to do that with, or one source of revenue, and that's customers. Nobody, by definition, nothing else pays us money. Products don't pay money. Employees don't pay money. It's only customers pay us money. And customers are in finite supply. They're a scarce resource. We can't go borrow them from a bank and pay them back with interest. We can't clone them. We can't create more of them. So even if there are a lot of customers, there are only so many who are willing and able to play in our arena. And finally, customers create value for a company today because they buy things today. And most companies have a pretty good handle on measuring that. But what they don't have such a good handle on is how today customers go up and down in equity, up and down in value, because they become more or less likely, because of something that happens today, to buy things from us in the future, or to recommend us to friends, or to use our product more, or to explore us if they need something else, or, you know, that happens today. So whether we measure it and manage it or not, it still happens today. What return on customer does is it looks at how much a customer is worth to us today, how much money we're making today from that customer, and also today how much that customer's value is going up or down. So that means that I would give you credit for making your numbers this quarter, but at the same time I would hold you accountable, maybe penalize you if you had to eat out some of the future value of the company in order to make that happen.
Well, could you maybe give us an example of something that would decrease a customer's lifetime value in the future but maybe bring you some immediate success?
All you and I have to do is live for a day in the real world, and we get plenty of examples of that. So it's every time I call a company where I already have a problem, and the ideal situation would be that I didn't have to call them at all. And now I've called them, and I have to wait on hold, and I finally get through to someone, and when I do, they can't solve my problem because either their computers aren't set up to be able to do it, or computers, by the way, that are set up by humans, or they have a policy that, of course, is not law and is no more valid than my own policies, but that policy prevents them from solving my problem. And so at that moment, even if I'm on a contract or a subscription, at that moment, I know I'm not going to do any more business with such a company. And so the value of that company went down just a little bit for shareholders, whether the company knows it or not, or manages it or not, or holds anybody accountable or not. And if they do, then they're able to manage their return on customer, and then they can start doing some pretty interesting things, like holding their own employees accountable for whether return on customers going up or down. They can hold their own employees accountable for whether or not they're using up future value to create current value.
Well, and is this something that you've seen resonating? I mean, can we expect to see Wall Street starting to measure return on customer in the future? Is that your
well,
grand
plan?
Well, that's
our goal. Yeah. And to be honest, we just have to talk to a whole lot more analysts. The analysts that we've talked to have all bought right in, because this does give us a way out of the short-termism that really does drive shareholder value down in the long run and lets people get away with it in the short run. So we also were quite surprised. The book came out about a year ago, and it made the top 10 bestseller list for business books in 2005, and it was only on the market for 6 months of the year.
Yeah.
And that surprised us. Of course, we were terrifically happy about it, but we think that the reason for that is because there's such a hunger for getting some sanity into balancing short-term with long-term. This doesn't mean that short-term doesn't matter. Of course, it does. But it also means that in the process of creating value for a company, that that really what any organization is trying to do is to change customers' behavior. And by that, I mean, you know, left to their own devices, customers might not come to our website or give us a call or recommend us to their friends or try us on or go for a test drive or kick the tires. And those are the kinds of things we want to get customers to do. So we're willing to expend some resources to make that happen. Now, usually if you ask companies what resources they have to spend, they say, oh, well, you know, money. And that's why we have a marketing budget, and that's why we have other kinds of customer initiatives. But the fact is that we use up something that's even in scarcer supply than money at most companies, and that's customers. I mean, most companies are going to run out of customers before they run out of money.
Yeah.
And even though by budgeting money we sort of are actively creating an artificial environment in which we kind of pretend that we have a shortage of money, but that of course makes sense in order to make sure that we maintain our ROI. But if we maintain our ROI at the expense of using up customers by making money from them today in a way that guarantees they're not going to do business with us tomorrow or they will do less business with us tomorrow, then we're not really using ROI in a very smart way. And you can think about it this way. This is a real simple kind of example. Let's imagine you have one customer, and you have two choices you can make. You can either spend $10 and then use that investment to do something with that customer, and that customer will pay you $20 back, so you get your $10 back plus another $10, or that would be a 100% return on investment. Or let's say that with that same customer, another choice that you have is to spend $20, and then in exchange for that, that customer will pay you back the original $20 plus an additional $15. So at the end of the day, you can either put $10 in your pocket at a 100% return on investment, or you can put $15 net in your pocket, but that would only be a 75% return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
If you only care about return on investment, then you'll probably choose the crummy $10. But if you care about your maximizing the customer's value, customers being the one thing we can't make more of, they're the scarce resource, they're only the only source of revenue. If you'd rather have $15 at the end of the day than $10 net, then you probably will want to temper your ROI decision with a return on customer decision. Well, ROI answers the question, what is the rate at which a customer creates value for us? How much value do we get for the money that we have to use?
Right.
And return on customer answers the question, how much value do we get for the customers we have to use?
Well, and which company, are there some companies out there that you see kind of getting this, and how are they overcoming this hurdle of kind of thinking about quarterly earnings all the time?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, and it's not just Google who says we don't care what anybody says, and it's not just Ford who's announcing that they're trying to go private again, and it's not just Anne Mulcahy at Xerox saying, I wish we could go private yesterday, because then they'd be free of these pressures to only think about current earnings. But it's also companies like USAA Insurance, where they're always interested in treating the customer the way the customer would want to be treated. It's Verizon Wireless, which has made real inroads into their customer churn. In the period between 2002 and 2004, Verizon Wireless actually reduced their customer churn on a monthly basis from 2.6 to 1.3. Now, they did that quietly because doing such things requires them to invest in what it will take to keep a customer, which is not a current revenue that comes from getting a new customer and signing a new contract. So instead of using every bit of money and resources that they have to try to increase today's revenue, they actually did a lot to increase today's revenue and also did things that made it possible, indeed desirable to many of their customers, to want to come back and renew their subscriptions with Verizon Wireless. And in that process, they almost doubled during that time period the value of the company. They had created about $13.7 billion in operations earnings by putting new handsets in new customers' hands, but they also, during that period, created over $10 billion in customer equity by reducing that customer churn on a monthly basis.
Sure. Huh, great.
Yeah.
And how do you see CRM technology sort of fitting into this concept?
Well, basically, what we have to ask ourselves is how do we make sure that we can hold somebody accountable for how much money they're making today and also hold them accountable at the same time for how much of the future revenue of customers is, or the equity of customers is going up or down. The rate at which that happens is return on customer. And customer relationship management software, as well as all the other technologies, as well as the strategies and the treatments and all the other efforts to increase customer value, fit into this piece by accomplishing the mission, by helping us to build customer equity and to make sure that the company is going to be worth more today than tomorrow. Here's a question that I would like to ask a company before I invest in them. I'd like to ask, well, I see what your return on investment has been the last few years, and I see what your goal is for the next couple of years, but what I'd really like to know is, do you have enough customer equity, and is your ROC rate enough to support your return on investment goal? Because what we found in our analyses is that some companies, although they've been riding high for a couple of years, simply do not have the customer equity banked to put that together. So what the newest measures and capabilities give us is a way of understanding for real how to predict accurately today how much our customers will be worth tomorrow. And in fact, to understand today how much our prospects are worth, customers we don't even have yet.
Right. Well, and to kind of shift back to technology again, I mean, with what people are calling Web 2.0 and blogs and RSS feeds and podcasts like this, do you see companies building customer equity through these sorts of methods? Are they being creative with that? Are there just opportunities that they're missing with this?
Well, a very good question, and you're asking a tactical question. Let me answer it strategically. We really have learned that in a world in which customers could not yet talk to each other on a massive basis, that is, pre-World Wide Web, then you didn't really need relationships with customers as much as you needed to make announcements. Because for most companies, the only voice that company's customers would hear would be the company's voice. But now we're living in a world in which other customers are as likely to influence, indeed more likely to influence in some cases, and certainly as readily available a source as the company's own communications are. So if that's the case, then here's a thought. Think about it. Ants leave little chemical trails, and that's how other ants know where to come find the food. And honeybees do a little dance, right?
Yep.
Well, that's because they spend some of their time going back and gathering sweets and honey and the things they need for honey, and then they go straight back to the hive. But they also spend some time sort of exploring. And so they have a sort of balance of short-term, long-term, better than a lot of companies do, and they also communicate that to each other. So I would suggest that what blogs and what other kinds of these personal kinds of communications do is it really allows us to give our honeybees dancing shoes and to give them ways to dance for each other. And it means that we have to be more trustworthy. We have to treat customers the way we would want to be treated if we were customers, because they're going to dance, and they're going to dance for each other and provide messages to each other. Are we helping to make sure that, you know, they can explore as well as take things back? And, gee, I don't want to press this metaphor too hard, but the point is are we investing in both the short-term and long-term relationships we have with these customers, and are we being as careful with helping to orchestrate and be aware of and do good things with the messages that our customers inevitably are going to give to each other as we are to the messages that we're putting out about ourselves?
Sure. All right, Martha. Well, I mean, you guys have sort of given us one-to-one marketing and return on customer. What's next from Peppers and Rogers, and what do you see as sort of the next way for managing customer relationships?
Oh, great question. You know, we're always thinking about that. It wakes me up in the middle of every night, literally. And yeah, this, the dark circles under my eyes are because I can't sleep worrying about this stuff. But the fact is that we are starting to see a lot more activity at customer companies and our clients and others who are basically thinking about how they can make sense out of balancing the short term and the long term, how they can do things that will actually build these relationships with customers in a world in which customers have so many other opportunities. And in order to make all of this happen, then voila, we need to empower employees to solve problems. The exact opposite of a policy that really does annoy a lot of customers is having our own employees set up in such a way that they can answer questions not covered by the rule book, and empower them and train them and motivate them to add value to the customer's life, and simultaneously to add value to the customer base of the company. So to do that, we have to have a different kind of employee. We have to have a different kind of management skill. We have to look for how to reward non-routine decision makers, and we have to couple all of that with being able to reward them for increasing the value of the customer base rather than just selling something or performing a task or any of those other things. So we also know that it makes sense to try to keep really valuable employees, and we think it's probably a lot more worthwhile and fun to work at a company where instead of being asked to get as much money as you can from each customer we have today, to instead instruct employees to ask, gee, how can we solve your problem? And of course, the ability to keep customers longer, as well as the ability to keep employees longer, drops directly to the bottom line.
Yeah, always more fun to work in those sorts of organizations. Well, Martha,
so we're seeing a lot more activity along those lines.
Great. Well, Martha, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been terrific.
All right. Well, that concludes our conversation with Martha Rogers and this month's installment of Voices of CRM. Please tune in next month when we talk with another luminary in the CRM market, and please continue to turn to searchcrm.com for all your CRM information needs. Thanks very much.